Hello, this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. I'm Steve Poizner, healthcare consumer advocate, founder, and executive director. Our nonprofit's mission is to help you navigate the complex healthcare system and understand your legal rights, options, and opportunities when you encounter problems and obstacles. We want to empower you with the information you need to fight back and get the best possible care. Our special guests, experts in their field of healthcare and medicine, provide you with an informative, interesting, and life-changing education on a variety of healthcare topics important to you and your loved ones. In our new Fight Back mini-cast series, we take you through the highlights and great educational information from our most popular podcast topics in our very large library. Let's get started. I think, you know, many of our listeners, of course, we've all heard about PTSD. We read about it. We see it on, you know, referenced on television quite a bit. But let's start with the basics. What exactly does post-traumatic stress disorder, what does that mean exactly?
Sure. So post-traumatic stress disorder, it's a mental health problem that some people develop after experiencing or witnessing a life-threatening event. Oftentimes things like combat with our military service members and other war zone experiences, natural disasters, car accidents, other types of accidents, or sexual assault, that kind of thing. And certainly that's not an exhaustive list. There are, of course, many other different types of events that could be life-threatening. And anyone who's gone through something like that can develop PTSD, as can first responders to these types of situations.
So how common is it, you know, to serve in the military? And of course, what a difficult, stressful job anyhow, but especially in combat situations. So how common is it for people to serve in the military and to have some type of PTSD?
It really seems to vary by service era. And it's also hard to know precisely what the figures are, but the best estimates we have is for example, for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, we're looking somewhere between what's typically described as 11 to 20%. And then with Gulf War, Desert Storm veterans, it's closer to about 12%. And with Vietnam War veterans, it's about 15%.
Right. What are the typical symptoms?
Well, when we look at symptoms, typically we're really looking at these four clusters or categories of symptoms. And it's important to keep in mind also that they can look very different for different people, in part because there's just so many symptoms that are possible and you don't need to have all the symptoms to have the diagnosis. But there does tend to be a pattern in terms of these clusters of or categories of symptoms, the first of which involves reliving the event in some capacity. So that happens when memories of the trauma are coming up in intrusive and unwanted ways. It can also include flashbacks where it can feel as though the event's actually happening again. Persistent nightmares would be another example. Also, having memories become easily triggered when something reminds you of the event, for example, certain sounds, certain smells, that kind of thing. So that's the first category, is reliving this event. The second one would be avoidance. So avoiding things that remind you of the event, avoiding certain people, situations, avoiding crowds, avoiding driving, or just trying to even stay busy all the time to distract yourself. I've seen many Vietnam-era veterans, for example, that really learned to cope by working super hard and staying really busy with work and family, and found that their symptoms became more difficult to manage once they retired and had less to focus on, and then essentially were coming into treatment for the first time. So we have reliving, we have avoidance. The third category is really feeling more negative than you were before. So feeling persistently sad, angry, numb, losing interest in things that people used to enjoy, being with family and friends, that kind of thing. Feeling like no one can be trusted, or it's hard to feel or express happiness or loving feelings or other positive emotions. Feeling a lot of guilt and shame about the traumatic event itself. And then finally, we see what we refer to as hyperarousal, feeling really on edge, jittery, keyed up, almost like it's just impossible to relax. People have difficulty sleeping or concentrating. They feel constantly on guard or on the lookout for danger, which is referred to as hypervigilance. So all these sorts of things. You might also have an exaggerated startle response where people get startled very easily and to a very significant degree. Other people might find themselves acting in unhealthy ways, like abusing substances, driving recklessly, that kind of thing. So these are like the general clusters, and typically people with PTSD have symptoms from each of those four clusters, not just one. And as with all mental health disorders, the final piece is just that this is really causing a lot of disturbance and distress in their lives.
Yeah, so let's talk about treatment. So what are some of the options here?
Well, that's the good news, is that we do have good treatments. And so when we talk about treatment specifically, there's certainly options in terms of medications. There's options in terms of different types of therapeutic approaches. And really, people will first determine what the best options are by talking with their therapist or talking with their doctor in terms of where their symptoms are, what the treatment options are. And then once they've chosen a particular type of treatment, they'll explain what will happen, how it's likely to help them feel better, why it works, all that kind of thing. And in terms of the most effective treatment, what we found is that trauma-focused therapies and medications tend to provide the best results. And so trauma focus really just refers to this idea that the treatment will focus on the memory of the traumatic event or its impact on someone's life. It typically involves meeting with the therapist once a week for an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the particular treatment type. And that usually lasts for about 3 to 4 months. And then each session often has specific goals and topics, which are then tailored to a specific person's needs and symptoms. And so these trauma-focused treatments are also evidence-based treatments, which means that they've been really well-researched, both with veterans and civilians alike, and it's been demonstrated to be helpful in reducing somebody's PTSD symptom severity. So that's why we often suggest that people start with those, because we've just seen that to be a reliable finding in terms of research. And when it comes to outcomes, fortunately, we have very good treatment for folks, especially if they've been dealing with this, whether that's just for a matter of months or if it's even been decades. So for some people, treatment can get rid of PTSD altogether. For others, it makes symptoms less intense, more manageable. And so that's really one thing I'm hoping that people can take from this, is that treatment can be quite helpful. And that's certainly something that's been supported in the research literature looking at PTSD. But even just anecdotally, that's been certainly my experience as well. Even for people that have been dealing with severe PTSD symptoms, maybe even for decades, dating back to, for example, like the Vietnam War, they can really make significant improvements in a relatively short amount of time, and they can hold on to those gains afterwards.
Have you seen much of a difference between men and women when it comes to PTSD?
Well, part of it is it's a good question you ask, and it's interesting based on the setting, because it can be such a male-dominated setting in terms of the VA, and there's such a high prevalence of military sexual trauma for both women and men, I should add, in terms of among the traumatic experiences that people have. And that also makes it difficult for many women to feel comfortable in VA settings, because they're so male-dominated, because the perpetrator was so frequently male. That's been another barrier in terms of accessing care. And so I know the VA has made some concerted efforts in recent years to really make the services more widely available, and specifically trying to help women so this becomes more of a friendly place to receive care. And so what I've noticed is, mainly on the treatment side, just different types of traumatic exposure being the leading being the focus of treatment. And it really tends to vary based on people's military occupational specialty, based on what their job was in the military. But for women, certainly military sexual trauma has been and continues to be a big problem. And it's something that we're trying to find more and more ways to offer help for.
I want to thank you for listening to today's Fight Back minicast. You can listen to the full podcast on this topic or check out additional podcasts by going to our website at www.healthcareconsumerrights.org. We also welcome your input and stories that we can use on future podcasts. This is Steve Poizner, and this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. Thanks for listening. I look forward to our next podcast. Talk with you soon.